Welcome to Above the Laughs. I'm Matt Chiaramonte, your host as always, and this is a great episode. It's a double episode. Not only do we have LA comic and regular over at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, Bill Dawes, but also from Down Under, Brandon Burns. And I feel bad about saying Down Under now. He's from Australia, though, for real. Both of them are hilarious, and we cover it all. We talk about genocide. We talk about racism. We talk about rape. All the good stuff. We cover it all. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Brendan Burns and Bill Dawes. Do you guys know each other? Well, have you worked?
Yeah,
together
we
before?
Met in New Zealand.
You got? Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Cool.
We met in the middle of the street in New Zealand,
and then we saw each other in Vegas at the UFC 100. And I don't know which one it was.
Oh my God! I haven't spoken to you since, have I?
No.
That's when I found out I'm deaf.
What the fuck?
I shit you not, man. What? I've been deaf since the age of 7. That's what I was talking about. You must have been out of the room trying to hit onto that crazy chick. You didn't take any. You weren't in the room for any of this, were you?
No.
Okay, so we're at the UFC, right? And we're at the weigh-in, and it's Charles Sonnen and Anderson Silva, and Anderson Silva shoulder barges him. It's all Brazilian fans. Room is deafening. Deafening. Just people bellowing. Just this gladiatorial, testosterone-fueled kind of thing. I'm going to stick here a bit because I tell on stage, but this is as it happened, right?
Sure.
And so he shoulder barges him, right? And it's just, everyone is just like practically jumping out of their seats. Just at the weigh-in. 9,000 people were at the weigh-in.
Yeah.
And then Rogan goes over to interview him, and you can't hear a thing. And then he goes to interview Anderson Silva, and I'm looking at the big screen, and you can't hear a thing. And my wife goes, have you met? Yeah, you met Laura.
Yeah.
And my wife goes, oh, God, don't scream at him while he's interviewing him. I can't hear, you know, can't hear any of that. And I'm looking at the screen, and I went, he said, Chow doesn't respect MMA. He doesn't respect the UFC, and tomorrow I'm going to break his face. And then, like, Bean and I are looking at one another. Bean's my wife's nickname. And we're looking at one another, and just like, that's unbelievable. I can't hear you or Luke. Luke is my son.
Yeah.
When you're in another room, you know, how with my hearing did I make that out? And Bean, who as you know is a very funny lady, went, that's because you're the only man in this building that has trained his hearing to negotiate the sound of one man laughing in a room full of people booing. So, I mean, that's wound up in the show, but we then went, I must be able to read lips.
Yeah.
So I went to the audiologist and he said, you've been partial hearing since the age of 7. He said, let me guess, everyone complains about how much you yell. I was like, well, first thing he says, oh, I've got to do this tonight. You know what? You reminded me of all the stuff that I didn't do last night. Is first of all, he goes, is it loud at your work? And I was like, well, when I'm on, apparently. And then he goes, yeah, you've been partial hearing since the age of 7. So you've unconsciously, surreptitiously, you know, you've learned to lip read. And I was going, I don't know about that. I can't watch telly with the volume down. And pick it up, and he goes, but no, but in context.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes, and let me ask you this, do you like stand at the front of the stage? Do you ask to have the lights on? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, so you can tell how you're going.
Wow.
So
how did you not know that you had partial hearing for the past?
Had nothing to compare it to, because I still have some hearing.
Oh, I guess,
And only in one ear?
No, both ears.
Do you think if you
I'm missing 36 decibels.
Do you think if you wouldn't have been partially deaf, you would have been like a soft-spoken guy who wouldn't have gotten
I don't know. Given the way I was raised, probably not.
No.
Nah,
can you sing?
I used to be able to sing, and now I can't.
Interesting.
I damaged my voice a lot, but I used to be able to sing rather well.
Because it seems like not being able to hear that well would make you a terrible singer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you can, that's interesting.
But that is true, that over the years, my singing has got way worse, whereas I used to have a pretty decent voice as a kid. Jim Jefferies used to be an opera singer.
Are you kidding?
Really?
Should you know? That's what he did for a living. He was a proper bona fide opera singer.
Wow.
You still catch him around the house sometimes. If you're staying with him, or you're staying in his house, or just rooming with him, you will hear him.
I love when you find out stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're just going, but he'll hold it for ages.
It's like Christian Walker used to be a ballet dancer. You're like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah,
what did you used to do?
You were trained.
I used to be a professional breakdancer.
Yeah.
Did you?
That was a break. I was a B-boy.
Get the.
My name was Kid Flex. I had the parachute pants.
Did you say Kid Flex?
I was in a crew called Shake and Break in Virginia. We competed at
Chuck E.
Cheese's.
Isn't this the beauty of podcasts? Because we're mates, but there's no way we would ever find this out without this intervention.
Because it ends up sounding like stuff like like you, like why would it ever come up? Like, hey, you know, I used to break dance.
Yeah.
Like, what am I bragging about? Pants or something?
I don't know. In the car, sometimes. If you're on the road together, you learn.
Yeah, that's.
They say you learn, you know, travel. You learn more about yourself. You don't. You learn more about your travel companion.
Right.
Like, because you're in the car, pretty much everything comes up.
Well, let's do more. We'll give us a secret about you. Give us some sort of thing no one else would know.
You know, I'm a pretty good cook, right?
No.
What do you mean?
Like, if I didn't do this, I'd probably cook.
Wow. Like, you could do, like, they must have some sort of celebrity kind of cook show somewhere.
You'd have a
I would do that. I would do
that.
That's the funny thing is, they like, I've done reality TV and walked off before. But the only one that I want to do is the Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
But they're going, like, we're not having him on. It's like, well, you have chefs yell left, right, and swear left, right, and center. But you're worried about what I'm going to say?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? That's the one time where I'm going to behave myself and actually be there to learn.
Yeah.
I'm like a massive fan of the British MasterChef, although I talked about that this year. What was the other? I actually divulged a lot of secrets in that past show you saw.
Huh.
About my dad and stuff.
Yeah, never
spoke about him.
Interesting.
You should do a celebrity breakdancing show as well.
Breakdance.
That would be
Did you spin on your head and shit?
Yeah, I mean, my specialty was mostly like popping and locking, but I could windmill. And
sure. Do you still do a little bit?
Oh, no way.
You couldn't watch?
I mean, I can still do some stuff.
We got a guy taking pictures. It'd be cool if we had like you.
Have you windmilled now? I used to be.
Oh, I can't windmill now.
I used to windmill on my back, but I couldn't headspin.
Yeah. No headspin. I could do handspins and different things. But
you know who else breakdance?
Who?
Adam Bloom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you know Adam Bloom?
You've
heard his name bandying around, haven't you?
Yeah. I also was a yoga teacher for 7 years.
Really?
That's a new one.
Yeah?
You haven't heard of that, have you?
No, I haven't.
You're trained in theater as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did some Broadway stuff. And,
yeah, yeah.
Ta-da!
I did Broadway!
Right.
What did you do in Broadway?
Well, obviously suck dick. The first thing I do is I came out to my dad. No, I can't sing at all. I'm a terrible singer.
First thing I had to learn how to do was slide across the room on my father's tears.
Break dancing.
No, I did a couple things. I did two plays on Broadway. One was about Vince Lombardi. It's called Lombardi.
Yeah.
Which was like about football, American football.
Yeah.
Sir,
I don't care.
To death.
I don't care.
No, I know.
You'll never get me into that argument.
No.
It's funny, like, I used to have, like, a really cockney manager.
Uh-huh.
And whenever they won the cricket,
mm-hmm.
or, like, Australia and England are the most heated rivalry, I think, in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if either one of us was to be attacked, I'm pretty sure we'd be the first country to step up. But it's really like when they did the UFC, the Smashers.
Yeah.
When they had the Aussies and the English guys in the same house. Dana White even said in the interview, there is so much stuff I couldn't put on telly.
Oh, really?
He said, when I put these guys in the same house, I had no idea
that's so fun.
Of the rivalry. And they're going to fight as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's young kids that are just like... And it's a tiny little house that they had. They didn't have the budget for the other show
that
they have for the Australian one. And but the funny thing is, towards the end, they are all friends.
Yeah.
But obviously, somewhere along the way, some crazy shit started happening, and then, you know, they started calling us convicts, and then we started saying, yeah, we were cannon fodder as well. You know, that's your shame. Don't nail us with that.
Yeah.
Going back
crazy.
And forth. So there would have been a lot of historical, but at the same time, like I said, if either one of us was to be attacked, I think we'd be the first ones to step up. It's like a father son relationship,
mm-hmm.
a very violent father son relationship. So. But I don't care about sport, never have. I mean, I like the UFC, but also national pride's never really been a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a gag now. Which was, what is it? Australians successfully, we are bad motherfuckers. We successfully committed genocide, and the world's under the delusion that we're surfers.
You know what?
When I went to South Africa, I had to give them credit. At least they had the balls to give their separatism a fucking name. which would kill in South Africa, like in front of particularly black South Africans.
Yeah.
And so I don't really go in for it. Like a lot of people say, how come you don't celebrate Australia Day? And it's not like I'm any kind of fucking. Clearly, I'm not Mr. PC.
Yeah.
I just think it's just a bit. Well, here's a story I've never told you.
Oh.
Is Tom Rhodes was asking me about this, is that you ask Australians about racism in Australia, and they all go, oh, Australia's really racist. And they go, really? How come? Like, what? On what way? And everyone goes, I don't know. And it's like, the number one cheese, you'll have to excuse me, right? The number one cheese in Australia is coon.
Mm-hmm.
It's called coon. Now, it's not like we're not aware of the fucking word. But we won't take it off the shelves, nothing.
Really?
I just, fuck yeah, it's fucking coon. It's been there for years, right? And Tom Rhodes was saying, so what gets behind it? And I think it's Bill Bryson put it best when he wrote a book about Australia, and he said, do more, try harder, start now. It's like gun control in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gun control in America is the equivalent of a person going insane. This country has gone insane.
Yeah.
And people want to know the answer, right? And the fact of the matter is, when it comes to the answer with someone being insane,
yeah,
there's 1,000 different reasons.
Yeah.
And then someone wants some sort of magic button solution, a single solitary solution? No. There's 1,000 different ways that someone is restored to sanity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's never anyone's
it's
different thing.
Magical.
So everyone's going, oh, well, it's computer games. Yeah. Oh, we need to arm teachers. The guns are out there. We can't... And the fact, you know, and people say, like, look, you don't understand that, you know, that this didn't happen in Australia. Yeah, it did. Happened once. Happened once. Guy shut up a school and the country went... You know what? It's worth it. We'll all hand in our guns.
Really?
Yeah, everyone went, fuck it.
Yeah.
We'll hand in our guns. Now, I accept that there are so many guns out there,
yeah,
that it's just a different kettle of fish.
Mm-hmm.
That you guys have gone insane with guns.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you have to do 100 different things. You have to do more, try harder, start now.
Right.
And that begins with fucking... You know what? I can't believe that there are guys still clinging to them. Going, yeah, but I like freedom and shooting and shit.
Yeah,
and I like mounting cannons to the back of my boat.
Mm.
You're like, isn't that fucking worth it, mate? Because you know what? Do you remember even when you were a non-smoker and you were told that you weren't allowed to smoke in restaurants?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely comparable with that. It has to be made socially unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Smoking now is, you know, and I smoke on and off.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone smokes inside, I'm like, you
fucking
dick. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It has to be like smoking.
Yeah.
It has to become socially unacceptable.
Right.
But
well, so wait, does that mean that take coon cheese off the shelves and that'll fix racism in Australia?
Oh, yeah. Well, they do more to try. Like, the thing is,
wait a second. Hold on. Like, are there raccoons in Australia? Because if you can say coon here and. So is it named after the slang, or is it named after something else?
I think it's the guy's name.
Okay.
There's a guy called Coon.
Okay.
But to be honest, you know, the black guys were there first.
Yeah.
It's not like you turned up and then some black people appeared and we went, oh, we better avoid the C word.
Yeah.
You know, it was from the get-go.
Right.
But it's not until you step outside the looking glass, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like they want to be screwed by the left and the right, right? They are screwed by the left and the right. The right are hoping the cops kill them off, and the left are like going, we know what's best for you, and let's just throw money at the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And everything that you would consider tokenistic in Australia is actually progress. So there was a thing they did called Sorry Day, which was a big deal, because they said, well, what do you want when it comes to land rights and everything? And they went, an apology would be nice. And the big deal was the first Prime Minister was asked that said, nah, fuck you.
Really?
That's all they wanted was an apology. So then the big deal was the next Prime Minister that stepped in declared Sorry Day. And everyone thought this is bullshit and so on. But I was talking to like another comic, Des Bishop, you know Des, don't you?
Yeah, man.
And he said that he was speaking to Aboriginal guys and said, I thought it was bullshit. I thought it was tokenistic. I thought it was patronising. And then it came round to Sorry Day and I was just crying all fucking day.
Wow.
And it's not until you step outside, because here's the thing. I remember growing up in Perth, if I went into town from the age of 12 to 14, I had to take cigarettes or money, because I had to give it to an old Aboriginal guy. I had to, or I was going to get punched in the head.
Oh.
Right? That was just going to happen. And it's not until I stepped outside the looking glass and went, oh, holy shit, they're getting fucked. I mean, they really like... Death in custody was actually a legal term. The number one killer of Aboriginals, I think it was in like 1981 in Western Australia, was custody.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Custody. They were locked up, and apparently then they wound up hanging themselves.
Aye.
And they were going like, oh, you know what? Yeah, they don't like being locked up. And it's like, yeah, they like being hanged by their belt buckle, even fucking worse, mate.
Yeah.
And it's not until like That's why I don't celebrate Australia Day, because the year of the bicentennial celebration of a nation, and this was the story I told Tom, was there's a mate of ours called Woody, and everyone, you know, in your group of friends has a guy called Woody, and he's a fucking idiot, and you keep him around, but bless him, but he just doesn't know. And it's the New Year's of the bicentennial, and so there's loads of white folks and Aboriginals going down to Fremantle docks, and they're fucked off, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically celebration of a nation. You're basically rubbing their faces in genocide.
Right.
Yeah.
And Woody, like a fucking idiot, walks up to there was a mall that was separating like the main strip from the park to the train station, and there was just a huge group of Aboriginal guys just fucking angry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Woody walks up to one of them and goes, "Happy New Year, mate." And the guy goes, "You fucking what?" You know, and he's like, "How fucking dare you?" Oh. And what are you standing there talking to this guy for fucking ages? And we're going, "Shut the fuck up. This dude is fucking angry, man. This dude is angry." And then our mate Cameron comes along and goes, "Oh, leave him alone, mate." And he put his hand on him. And when he put his hand on him, across the way, we were like 16, 17, came the biggest Aboriginal guy I've ever seen in my life. You could see the sinew of his arms as he threw the hardest punch ever seen in my fucking life, as he just like, and Cameron, like a champion, just took it, because he knew if he went down, there was going to be mobbings and we were all going to fucking die. And he just goes, bang, right? And his chin is just like, and he's like staggering back five steps, but knowing full well not to go down. And Woody goes, "What's going on?" At which point, I can't remember whether it was me or my mate Rob, grabbed Woody and went, "Woody, bang," and punched Woody in the head. Because that's the only way we could get out of that situation. Because then for a second, they're going, "Wait a second, why did they punch him?" And then we were out of there. And we were like, "You dumb motherfucker." And he was going, whoa, I was just trying to say Happy New Year. And they're going, "It's the bicentennial, you dumb cunt."
Yeah.
It was built on fucking genocide.
Yeah.
So no one really appreciates it until you step outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, until you step outside Australia, and then you go back in and you go, "Oh, fuck. This isn't right."
Yeah.
This isn't right at all. Mm-hmm. And but also people go, "Well, why is there tension?" But it's also you remember growing up that there was anger that you were going to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not until you step outside it that you actually realise, you know, where that anger's coming from. There you go. How did we get on that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I loved it though. Do you think that applies to like white people and black people in America? Do you think that's close to the equivalent? Because I feel like racism is solved in America. I'm kidding.
And if it's not, we're gonna solve it.
But
right
I
now,
feel
guys.
Like I feel like it's no racism is awful in America. But for some reason, it feels worse in Australia, because I feel like the Aboriginals are more fucked.
Absolutely.
Than the African American community.
Yeah.
In America.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but they're on a par with, I think, Native Americans.
Yeah, the Native Americans is a more.
I don't. Well, hang on.
Aboriginals don't have the thing like, oh, all the white women want to fuck them, like in America.
No, well, I mean, having said that, America is the worst country to be African American in.
What?
Yeah.
I want to be black every day of my life.
No, I'm saying you go African. No. I'm saying if you're African American and you go to any other country, they fucking love you.
Oh,
you're like
a
celebrity.
Yeah.
They love you. I remember growing up when the Navy used to come to town, and all the naval guys said that Perth was their favorite port because they were like celebrities. That there was just fucking Perth chicks lining up because they crave a gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
it's the world's most secluded capital.
Right.
And they are there ready to fucking just practically jump on men's fucking fists with their dripping badges as they step off the. And that was like from like, I remember that from the 70s and 80s, that when they arrived at the docks, there was just slappers everywhere.
Wow.
Just waiting at the docks just to kiss the guys as they got off.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Like, if you went to Japan, I'm pointing to a black guy.
Oh, yeah. There's that black guy in the room, guys. Curtis.
You would, like, I mean, in Japan, black men are like,
oh, yeah.
Godzilla! No, it's not that. But they really, like, I know black men literally, like, I go to Japan once a year to get pussy. Like, just to pay them pussy. Like, once, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. But even in Africa, you're treated like a celebrity. You've got, like, a baseball cap on and an American accent. Oh, should you not?
Awesome.
I shit you not. Mm-hmm. We did the
really. I thought they're like African, like African men. They didn't like African American men.
That's
I thought
here.
There was a tension.
That's
Oh, here, African men come here.
Yeah, it's here. It's feel privileged.
And I love, like, too, when you see, like, African men come to America, they're always, they try to rock, like, the FUBU and the thing, but then they have, like, pleated khakis. You're like, you're not getting the outfit completely right.
Yeah. Penny loafers.
Penny loafers with, like, baggy jeans, yeah.
Well, and just to get a little bit of comedy talk in real quick, because, I mean, it's great, but just for, I was going to ask about the different crowds. You guys are performing in Chicago now, and I don't know how the crowd is reacting to your guys' style while you've been here.
Would you like to take that one, Brendan? Because Brendan recorded his CD.
Your hour here.
I recorded my first US album here in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here kind of to celebrate. It's my first US specific album.
Yeah.
And I was here when it was the Lakeshore.
Right.
Lakeshore Theatre, which was like this kind of grungy, indie,
mm-hmm.
people very much keeping their ear to the ground.
Right.
In the comedy industry. So, and the place was really like, it was, they were even thinking of putting people up on the stage.
Yeah.
And to sit around the stage. And then it's been quite a few years since I've been back. And the Laugh Factory just were willing to take a punt on me.
Yeah.
It's the same building, and actually Bill has very good contacts there, don't
mm-hmm.
he?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill just
you're a regular at the LA.
In the LA.
Oh yeah. So he talked them into, it was basically mm-hmm. Bill's doing
right.
getting me down here.
Do you find the American crowds like more like sensitive or than maybe in England or
everywhere has their boundaries.
Yeah.
You know?
Are people
we met in New Zealand, and
yeah.
when I went to when I went to New Zealand, like I love doing like race jokes.
Yeah.
I love doing like a really kind of fun, smart joke, and then
yeah.
just put a little like Mexicans or
yeah.
whatever in there. Just
that's
to catch.
That's
her
catchphrase,
know?
Isn't it?
and sometimes they're like silly and funny or
yeah.
whatever it is. So when I went to New Zealand, I was like, well, I did a stupid joke. I rarely did it. But it was basically something like a classic in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Maori guy was like staring at me, really like oh, with big tattoos.
Yeah.
Because I did some Maori joke, and then afterwards I was
Maori.
Like,
do you mean
Maori?
Maori? Oh yeah, yeah.
Not Maury Povich.
Maori.
Like,
yeah.
Maury.
Yeah. Maury.
I thought Maori
fucking
was in New Zealand.
Yeah, people
were
like
that
and
your babies. Is that guy?
So,
yeah.
So and he was like, oh no, it's funny, it was cool, and did. But I did a joke like the next night after that happened. I said that I go, this Maori guy, you know, da da da. He was angry at me and. But after the show, I explained to him that I think when you talk about bad stuff, it's good. When you talk about racism, it actually lessens the effect of
yeah.
it. And he was like, oh, he goes, I believe that. And he gave me a hongi, and it was awesome. He hugged. It was amazing. I mean, he took my wallet during it. But
sure.
it was a small price to pay.
Yeah.
So that was
yeah,
a joke
yeah.
I did. I got hate mail like you wouldn't believe. Because
yeah.
I did
really?
That at the on the north part of the big theater, like 1,200 people.
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
I got like private hate mail, and the reviews were like, Bill Dawes was funny, but he's racist. I had to
really?
Go back to America, leave the race stuff out of your act. Why
wow,
are you ruining
really?
Your act with that racist material?
Something I learned recently is, because America is almost getting close to being, comedically, America is post-racial.
Yeah.
Comedically, I think, you know, because, but New Zealand and Australia takes its lead from England. And England had alternative comedy began in England,
mm-hmm.
and it was a backlash against the end of the pier, Dickie Bow, Bernard Manning type guys. Sure. My wife's a bastard. There was a black fella; he was stealing.
Yeah,
right. And they all just swapped these old kind of hateful, you know, racist jokes,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a whole bunch of kind of hip educated people that
mm-hmm.
that wanted to have a backlash against that, and Australia was kind of informed by that, New Zealand was kind of informed by that. However, what then happened over the next 20 years? Is only white people turned up because it stopped being culturally relevant, and it's like it's starting to happen now. But you're
mm-hmm.
really hard pushed to play a black note, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I even said to him, "Look, you know what? They won't tolerate that because." But I think that's also closed-minded in itself, because when he says I went to a school that was 80% black and 20% terrified, no one in that room can understand that perception.
Right.
No white person in that room can understand that perception, so they just immediately go, well, that's racist. And you're like, well, you don't understand his upbringing. He was into fucking hip hop.
Yeah.
He obviously, you know, the way that he dresses, the guy used to be a fucking
break
dancer. He pops and locks. He went to a black school.
Yeah.
He has been raised in a black environment.
Yeah.
So that is going to inform his comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they can't get their head around that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I'm about one of three guys that will address race that would still be considered alternative.
Yeah. Neil Brennan was here. You know Neil Brennan. He was here a few weeks ago, and he's about to film his special. He did a podcast with me. We were talking about that, and he's about to record a Comedy Central hour where he says the N-word about, you know, 10 or 12 times throughout his show. And he's like, yeah, I'm a little worried about, you know, how it's going to go over. Like, he's comfortable
with
it.
He's got the ultimate stamp of black comedy.
The Chappelle Show stamp. But still, he's like, I don't know how America's going to react to that. Because people are very quick to, it seems like, jump on the, like, even like, if they're not offended, like, supposed to be offended.
I had a bet on it in the album that we're just mentioning, out now on Stand Up Records.
Sure, plug it.
It was called M-Bombs and Meow Meows. And it was, I don't say the N-word. I won't do the whole bit, but it was, I don't say the N-word in public. I don't say the N-word in public, just during sex. which is weird, because my girlfriend's Chinese. I'm like, you have your own words. But the point behind the bit that I say is, you know what? It's a black call. Comes down to manners. I'm not offended or outraged by that word. It is just a word. But it's a black call.
Yeah.
You know, it's just manners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And but then I say, but I think it's the wrong call, because by continuing to make that word taboo, no one's taking it from me.
Yeah,
I'm not running around all day wondering where is my fucking, you know, nigger entitlement. Right. I'm not wondering all day going, God damn it, when am I going to be able to pop this shit out? The only person you're giving it to is racists.
Right.
You're not taking it off me.
Mm-hmm.
You're just giving it to racists.
That's brilliant.
That it's just, and it's given it, you've given it gift wrapped.
Because
no matter how fucking far you come, that redneck hick will still have that. And you fucking, you've put it in a little box for him. And you've gone, there you go. This is how you get me. Every fucking time.
Right.
Enjoy yourself. It's yours.
Yeah, I believe like if you do a black joke that, or about black people, whatever. And I have like a silly one where I go, oh, I pull out like a Lance Armstrong sponsor. Hold on, for the Mexicans, let me explain what pulling out is. Oh, for the black people, let me explain who Lance Armstrong is. It's like silly.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's like, oh, it's like, really? So I talk about black people that know Lance Armstrong. That's a line that I cross somehow. That's,
no, but English people, it's like I said, it's English people still have, English middle class people, and let's face it, New Zealand, fact of the matter is, every New Zealand comic, the easiest thing they do, they put on a Maori accent, the place goes fucking nuts, right?
Yeah.
They can't understand that you went to a black school. Yeah. They can't understand your perspective on life. They can't get their head around it. But also, they don't realise that it's far easier to call you a racist than to actually say, oh, I have a sheltered lifestyle and I'm not capable of understanding this. And I mean, that's why, you know, I always said, like, I love what Bill does because it's so silly. And it is like, he's always got such a kind of cheeky glint in his eye. And that is his perspective. And he does black gigs.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, 90% of the fucking white Cambridge, because, you know, there's Cambridge and Oxford in the UK. And it's a bit of a boys' club, and there's a degree of classism going on. And certain guys are allowed certain things. You know, the guy with the right accent is allowed irony. The guy with the wrong accent isn't.
Right.
And so they don't understand the inherent bigotry in that, of going, well, this guy can't possibly understand morality.
Mm.
But also, this guy can't possibly have gone to a school that was 80% black.
Right.
I didn't. How would that happen? It's far easier to go, he's a racist, than to go, oh, there is other perspectives in life.
Yeah. And also, I think that if you feel uncomfortable about something, that means that exists in you. So if you're really uncomfortable about a racist joke, then you're a fucking racist, period. I'm sorry. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I read.
Really believe.
Oh, I don't
know,
like,
no, I'm talking about a joke. I'm not talking about, like, you're at a cocktail party hanging with your buddies. Like, so this nigga, you know, I'm talking about, like, you're at a comic, and you get, like, literally, like, oh, I can't because they said a joke about a black person.
But here's my
I feel
thing,
like,
right?
It's like you're giving so much weight
there's
to that word.
There's something about
in your
being
head,
in a group,
you know?
Too, that makes people have that reaction, that they're all sitting around, they're all aware that the people around them. Because
you're giving
it
so much power.
No, no, I get that. But at the same time, I went to, like, I go to LA clubs.
Yeah.
And I watched 20 guys say Mexican steel.
Mm-hmm.
20 guys say Mexican steel. And I'm just like, really? You know, it's a bit fucking. Look, I don't fuck with Aboriginals.
Yeah, well, that's but
that's my own personal boundaries.
But
I don't lay that on.
But the thing about you don't like that is because that's not funny. Mexican Steel isn't funny.
That's right.
It's about
that. I don't like it because you tell a good joke about anything on Metal.
Bill, you wrote a thing after the Tosh.
After the Daniel Tosh rape
thing. Yeah, I read that. Yeah. It was kind of similar to this.
It was like a defense of rape jokes.
Right, yeah.
And
essentially being that, like, if something, you know, is in the field of comedy and it's funny, that none of that shit should really matter, right?
Yeah, well, also, it's like people, and this is a big thing that happened with, like, was it Frankie Boyle or who was the other guy, Stuart Lee? Like, you do a special and you're doing, like, oh, Packies and da-da-da, and you go 15 people, all of a sudden, Down syndrome, and someone's like, how dare you? My son has Down syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so now it pertains to your narcissistic ass. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else pertained to you, so it wasn't offensive. But it's offensive suddenly because you deem it offensive. Like, what I believe, because I'm a fucking Buddhist, is that, like, you can't offend anyone. You can only be offended. That's
right.
That's kind of what I said in the thing. Like, I can receive something as offensive by my mind, by my damage, by my fucked upness.
Yeah.
But there's nothing you can say to me that's actually literally objectively offensive.
That's true. Very few people take responsibility for their perspective.
Yeah.
Or their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're completely responsible for your own feelings.
100%.
Yeah.
They're yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a whole show on it once, in fact, actually, that exposed the audience's racism to themselves. Available on Amazon.co. Brendan Burns, so I suppose this is offensive now.
Right.
Great,
great
plug. Here's the thing, though. I still think there's a balance to that of, yeah, you're right, you can only choose to be offended. But I also get a bit bored. Let's face it, comics want the double standards.
Of course.
We want to be taken seriously, but we don't want to be taken seriously.
Right.
Immensely. You know what I mean? It's like, we always want to go, oh, comedy's an out. But then we're constantly going, why does no one understand our art?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're never fucking happy. We are petulant fucking children on this matter.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think there's still a bit of an overstatement. Because I got a bit bored of the plethora of rape and paedophile jokes. I was like, I'm not offended, I'm fucking bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and if you're going to go there, you better make it amazing because I've heard 50 today.
Yeah.
Right?
And
but also, I don't buy into the idea that, yeah, you have the right to do that, that's fine. And it's like, I know women that have been raped and they've made a very good argument of, they didn't say stop this, they didn't say I'm offended, but they don't like the idea of being made to feel like a prude if they're sitting in a comedy club and they hear 50 rape jokes in a row. Because also no one does race or culture in England.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever something edgy comes up, that's what everyone does.
The
quick fit then is rape and paedophile.
Mm-hmm.
Rape, paedophile, rape, 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 rape. And it's all night long. And there were women saying, I don't appreciate being made to feel a prude because I leave a room because someone's on stage reminding me of the worst thing that ever happened in my fucking life.
Yeah.
That also, the fact that when you're being raped, you're waiting for it to fucking end.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can you imagine being there in a room where like 10 guys get up and do a rape gag?
Of course.
That must be very fucking reminiscent
of
that. And so so the flip side of that is I don't buy into the idea of guys painting themselves as martyrs of freedom of speech. I've got the right to, you know what, you're not fucking Rosa Parks. You're not fucking making a statement.
Yeah.
You're a fucking rather silly man trying to get away with, you know, making rape funny.
Yeah.
So you can't stand there and go, I'm the last bastion of freedom of speech. It's like, I still think you need to be willing to pull the rug under yourself.
Got it.
On that.
And well, here's the thing. I think the reason like I do a lot of black rooms is because it's not because I have such funny black jokes. It's because it's authentic to me.
Yeah.
You know, and really it's about that. If something's authentic to you, whatever it is, people will know that in a subtle way. I think people will go like, okay, he's not just up here talking this crap because he thinks he wants it. There's something authentic because I've seen white comics do Chocolate Sundae in LA, and they just fucking eat it. And they're like, oh, because they try to speak black, and they kind of like go hard at like at black culture and stuff. And people are like, and you know, I'll do a little bit, but I think people can tell, which is why I get booked so much on those shows because they go, okay, there's something about this guy that's for real.
But it's because also you're used to being in that environment, and you're used
to
being yourself in that environment.
Yeah.
It's very apparent. And the people that get upset the most are white people by you.
Yeah.
Because white people are like going, No. It's like that thing of like, no. He's black. Don't remind him.
That's hilarious. I love that. It's like equating black people with rape.
It is. I said that at the time as well, that you could do rape but not race. And I'm like, does that mean that you think being black is worse than being rape? I'm like, oh, I do rape because it would be so preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what? So are you fucking having like an offense rung here.
That's hilarious.
And just imagine, like, you're getting about, like, you're sitting there thinking, fuck, I've got a house and a mortgage and a really good job, but apparently, I'm still a fucking, worse than a, I'm more put upon than a rape victim.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, wow. Well, guys, you got a show to do.
Yeah, we do. So let's go fuck this up.
Thanks a lot
after
for doing
all that highfalutin talk.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was fun. Thank you for listening to Above the Laughs. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I did. Don't forget that you can listen to all the episodes over on iTunes by looking up Above the Laughs. They're also hosted at Podomatic.com if you want to look there. And I write blog pieces to go along with every one of these podcasts. And if you want to read some of those, a bunch of them are posted up at ComedyofChicago.com. So go to ComedyofChicago.com, go to iTunes, go to Podomatic, go to LaughFactory.com, and look to see when these comedians are coming here so you can see them. And maybe I'll be there, trying to force comedians to do my podcast. Either way, thank you for listening, and have a nice day. That's my catchphrase.